The following is a paid program, and the opinions expressed within it are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of KACO Radio or Mulman Media Management and staff.
Welcome. This is Joe Poe.
And Mary Helen Deere.
Hosting Kiowa Talk, created by the late J.T. Goombay. Our sponsors for Kiowa Talk here on Saturday on New Country 98.5 KACO are Kiowas for a Better Future, District 5 Legislator Anita Johnson, District 7 Legislator Jacob Sotai, Susan Campbell, Kiowa Citizen, and Lawrence Spotted Bird, Kiowa Citizen. And we have Leonard Kozad Jr. on with us today, and he'll give the opening prayer for the show. Leonard, how are you doing today?
Oh, I guess pretty good.
Well, go ahead. You got the prayer.
All right. Thank you. You know, before I pray, I want to say again to you people on radio station, thank you for letting the Kiowas broadcast their events, what they have in the future. I think from the bottom of my heart, George, you're a good friend. I appreciate you. I'm couple pay the dog. He go on this eye. He go, key, they son go. Oh, no, I won't time a dog. He go, my eyes are so big. They ain't dogs. I go, no, shall I tell you, a dog go, ain't bongo. They go, our dogs, our dog. He go, no, I won't time. Uncle Ingo go, on this eye. He go, Ingo go, go home and go. No, I won't time a dog. He go, I get go, being they go, on this eye. He go, I told they go. They go, they go, hey, get dog. How they go in time, dog, dog, he go, know him, dog. Only time, damn dog. Only time, get dog, he tell him, dog, Jesus Christ. I thank you again for another beautiful day, dear God. Bless all the Native Americans here in Oklahoma. That all will be good for everyone. Thank you, dear God, for another beautiful day. I hope, amen.
Leonard, thank you for that beautiful prayer, and hopefully one of these next couple of weeks you can come down and give the prayer in person, then we'll go over to Jake's Rib and eat some ribs. All right, next part of the show is Mary Helen Deere is here to conduct the interview, and our Kiowa Elder of the Week is Raymond Donkema.
Donkema.
Well, I got that wrong. I'm sure I'll get in trouble for that later. Go ahead.
Raymond, good to have you on the show today. We like to get stories of some of our Kiowa elders and to talk about, number one, you know, who's your folks? And then after that, talk about how you were raised, where you grew up, and then how it affected you being in your grown-up years. I remember, you know, I think you were a good friend of my Uncle Hesse, and I remember y'all as kids running around.
Yeah, at Saddle Mountain.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, that was our church, of course.
Yeah.
Uh, far as I can remember, I was always in that church over there.
Yeah.
The whole family would go over there, and back in those days, we're at church all day.
Yep. All day they and were, part of the night. So who's your folks? Talk to us about where you came from.
Of course, my mom and dad were Wiser and Henrietta Tonkemay. And we lived over there 13 and a half miles south of Carnegie. And back in those days, there was I can remember back in the 40, 45, 46 on up this way. Of course, everybody out there had wood stoves, but no electricity. We were fortunate to have a car most of the time. Roads were muddy, but we always went to church on Sunday and went all day. And mom and I would cook for lunch. We have lunch out there, then noontime, we have a lunch break for about an hour, then back to services the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Of course, we had our chores around the house, always up early. Mom and dad were always up pretty early before the sun. It was still dark, and they'd be up early. And they'd be cooking breakfast, and dad would be working over there in a ranch over there, farming ranch work. And there's probably about 5 or 6 of us all the time out there. And get the wood stove going. And went to school out there, that way out there, I don't know, about 11 and a half miles southeast of Carnegie, a place called Alden.
Yeah.
Country school out there. I went to the 12th grade at the time, but I left there in 1957, I think it was, because they had done away with the high school, and I went to Carnegie. But back in those days, there's a lot of people just down the road, a mile or two. Everybody moved away now. There's nobody around there anymore. We go down there about maybe two or three times a week. Somebody would have a prayer meeting just right down the road somewhere.
Yeah.
And that was most of what we did during the week. And, of course, Saturdays, we had to go to town in shifts. We couldn't go to all fit in the car. So we just, one Saturday would be our turn, next Saturday would be the other one's turn, and like that. Always cutting wood, and we always had to have wood on the porch there and some kindling to start the fire with. And of course, we didn't have no radio or TV. I don't know when we got TV, probably in the early 50s, maybe 55, 56, not sure, but we had one radio there. We didn't get very much reception out there. I think on a Saturday, we got about a couple of stations on Saturday. We could just barely hear the station on radio, and that's all we listened to was radio and country western music. But they had programs on the radio, like some kind of serial stories. And, of course, Saturday night was the Grand Ole Opry. It's the Grand Ole Opry on Saturday night, but we couldn't hardly hear. We had to get close up to the radio. But most of our clothes were Henry Downs, of course. As we're going, what was that something to do out there? We down at the creek there, we had a lot of pecans down there. And we did a lot of gathering pecans. Wintertime, mostly, we had that pecans that we cut and saw wood, haul up to the house, probably around my 100 yards, quite a ways at the time. And, of course, we had an old outhouse sitting out there away from the house. And But it was pretty cold in those days, I guess. Pretty cold. It seemed like it was colder in those days than it is now, and it snowed more and more often. But we didn't seem to mind that. We ran around out there, and sometimes we didn't have the shoes on out there, but that didn't last too long. Somebody would jump, holler at us, run around with no shoes on out there. But we had a hard time, I guess, but we didn't know it. We were happy. I don't think we ever had, we're happy all the time with what we had, and we always had enough to eat, and Mom always canned stuff. We had a pretty good sized garden over there by our barn, and she canned stuff for the winter, and of course, we had pecans to sell, and all the families out there in the area, but we had the cotton fields. We call it pulling bowls in those days, pulling cotton, and about all the families around there were, the whole families be out there doing that. And but the only income we had out there, plus we did a lot of hunting out there. Most kind of grew up on that hunting, squirrels and rabbits. And of course, summertime we did a lot of fishing out there, so we knew, put something on the table to eat. Made sure we got chores done in the morning and the evening. Like I said, we always made sure we had some wood put on the porch, or it was handy for Dad. Otherwise, it'd make us dance around, put a switch on us. And Grandma died in 1950. I was pretty close to her. Her and I was close together quite a bit. And she passed away in 1950, and I was went back in the family, I guess, because that was me and Grandma. And we had a cellar out there, granite wall cellar with dirt floor and tin and wooden roof. And of course, the storms were bad. I don't know how we fit in that cellar, because it looks pretty small today compared to how many of us was out there. There's a whole bunch of us. It seemed like, I don't know how we fit in there, but we seemed to fit in there okay. People would come over in those days, people would come over and, you know, if you needed some flour, sugar, salt, or whatever, you know, and nobody was home, you took what you needed. You took what you needed, and it was okay. You didn't lock your doors. I was thinking about locked your doors right now. You took what you needed, and they told you about it later on, or maybe they left you something. That's how they did things back there. It started. A lot of trust out there. You sure can't do it nowadays. So lock your doors, but that's how it was then. And of course, we all grew up, the boys grew up on farm and ranch work. We had a big ranch by my uncle, must have did a lot of farm and ranch work over there, hard work. But that was work. Otherwise, we didn't have any money in our pocket to jingle around with, but When we did go out there for whatever monies we all earned together, Dad would get it all. And they'd give us little money, maybe 25 cents, maybe, which was a lot to me. Maybe got a dime, 15 cents on a Saturday. And whatever we worked for that week, I went to went into Dad, so we all pitched in for that, for food. And I remember one time I asked my mom, how come I didn't have any money? How do I work? How come I work all the time and I don't get any money? She said, you're eating it. You're wearing it. Well, I said, I need somebody to jingle in my pocket. I didn't know it was going on to a food and clothes. But I didn't know that. But we always kind of had a car, and Dad was always working on the cars, and I was so bad. I was getting stuck up there. We had to walk about a quarter mile almost to catch a school bus. It was cold, it was cold. I know you tell kids about that things nowadays, they're not going to believe you.
Yeah.
Sit over there, we sit in the bank there, find a little bank for a windbreak, or grass, and a bank there. Maybe sitting there for a little time, get the kind of windbreak we can't, waiting on a bus, school bus. But like I said, we're fun. We mostly we spent a lot of time at church, prayer meetings, church. That's all we knew around there. I don't know until it was later on, I guess in the 50s, middle 50s or late 50s, something like that. That's when they started going to powwows. Back in those days, and I was young, we didn't go to those things. I guess when I was probably about 16 years old, 15 years old, something like that. It's when I remember going to Carnegie and having danced down there. But we didn't, like I said, we didn't go to town very much, and we lasted out there. We had plenty to do out there. We had plenty of water. Somebody's always out there fishing and swimming and doing something out there. People would come over there and dump their kids off and leaving for a while, come back later on. There was all kinds of kids over there, up and down the creek there, swimming and fishing and all that, picking plums, whatever. And it's always somebody down there, it seemed like. But we had a lot of fun.
Yo, Raymond? Considering how you grew up and kids are so different now, is there something you would tell your children or grandchildren about how to live their lives?
I have five sisters, and there's five of us boys. And of course, my older sister, she was the boss when they were gone. Sometimes they'd be gone sometime. Mom and Dad, I don't know what was going on. I'd be gone 3 days, but I guess maybe somebody be in the hospital. But my older sister used to be our boss, and my older brothers, I didn't see too much of my older brothers. They were gone in service, I guess, and later on. But it's a big change from there to nowadays, like electricity, and you got all kinds of electronic gadgets nowadays. I never thought of that in those days. A lot of people would walk around in those days, but everybody would walk to town, and it didn't seem to bother them. I remember those Gimmesell boys would come from Saddle Mountain, about 6 miles, and they walk all the way from over there to run around and visit with my older brothers. Then they walk back in the evening. That's how we did things. I walked down the road about 3 miles to visit and come back in time. But it might have seemed boring, but to us, there was always something to do, our style. We didn't have a lot of things out there that we have nowadays. So we didn't miss anything like that. We just made do what we had.
Yeah, I remember going out to Green Valley, and you know, playing with my cousins out there. And you look at you know what the kids do now and what we did. I think we had more fun. You know, it certainly was much more innocent. You know, playing in the creek, climbing the hills.
We used to have a 4th of July celebration down in the creek down there. Dad had a baseball diamond down there, and I guess it was my grandpa's old dance ground down there.
Oh.
Across the creek, the dance ground and baseball diamond. I remember the baseball diamond and the ball games, but the dancing was for my time. I guess grandpa passed away, and I guess he quit. They quit after that.
Okay.
But that's kind of how that was.
Okay. Well, Raymond, I sure do appreciate your taking us down memory lane, because a lot of your memories are similar to mine. And it was a lot of fun. So
spent a lot of time over there down the road, 2 miles west of us, was the Boindies.
Yeah.
It was over there.
Yep, I remember your parents coming over.
And anyway, we all had something to do. We had a lot of fun out there, and look back on it. It just a lot of change.
Yeah, okay.
It bothers me nowadays that just a few elders, and we don't hear our songs or our language anymore.
Yeah.
And I can't visit with anybody.
Yeah. Well,
it's all gone.
Well, I'm glad they're trying to bring it back. You know, there's a lot of people working, you know, to try and bring the language back. So, Raymond, we are running out of time here now, and I sure do appreciate your time with us.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you for being on the show.
Bye.
All right. So that was our Kyrewell Elder of the Week. Next up, we have an extra special guest in the studio today, and it is Rose Garza, formerly an employee of the Kiowa Finance Department, and she has a few things to let us know. Rose, how are you doing today?
Oh, well, I'm doing pretty good, Joe, and I appreciate you letting me come in on the show. And hi to all my families and friends and my enemies out there.
Well, okay, well, Rose, go ahead. We'll just pull your string and we'll just let you be a chatty Cathy.
Okay, well, since you're calling me Chatty Cathy, my ex-coworker used to call me that.
Did she really? I didn't even know that.
Yes. So I hope she's listening. But anyway, I am from the Imhula family. My mom was the late Annette Imhula, and my grandparents were Matilda and John. And I live over there by Apache Y. But I started working for the Kiowa Tribe Finance Department back in January of 2018 in the Finance Department. Before that, I had worked for BIA, Riverside Indian School, the Army, and IHS, and then I came to the Tribe. And my position at the Kiowa Tribe Finance Department was the Accounts Payable Specialist. And my job included reconciling credit card reconciliations for the people that had those debit cards. And that was one of my duties. And I paid all the utility bills. I did the travel and some other things that I did over there, but I'm not longer employed there because I was wrongfully terminated by the ex-executive director, Enoch Colity, and I just want to let everybody know, well, my close families and friends know, that he accused me of signing his signature on a credit card requisition, which I did not. And said I was fired because of that and for personal gain. Well, I was ordering 1099s for the Kiowa Tribe, so I can issue out those 1099s to everybody that made money over $600, so they'll be held accountable through IRS. And my supervisor at the time is the one that got the signature from Enoch, so there was no way I forged his signature. It was just something that one day at 4:30, they couldn't come and sit and talk with me, chairman or the executive director. They didn't have the decency to fire me right. They had to send up security and HR director, Rita Harjo, I believe. And after I read it, I was like, this is all false. I didn't sign anybody's signature. But I still had to go. They told me I had to appeal it. When the next day, my boss said that she got the signature from Enoch Colity, and Enoch's like, well, she still has to appeal it. Well, which is just, I was kind of like flabbergasted in how they did something. And I'm like, the only reason why I could think of them firing me is because of what I knew about the credit cards and the travel and whatever reason.
So since you did have to reconcile those credit cards, let's go over some red flags and shocking things that you found in some of the chairman's credit cards expenditures from the Kiowa Tribe account.
Well, his is the only one I could not reconcile. Everybody else I could reconcile. Well, I take that back. There was two. Nick, that was the former procurement officer, and Matt's credit card I could not reconcile.
And how come you couldn't reconcile them?
Because I had no approved documents to reconcile off that charge that was on.
Well, what kind of charges were you seeing on his debit card?
Well, I was going through trying to reconcile his, and I came across some items on there that I had no idea what they were, but it did have an 800 number on there, so I called it. And lo and behold, it was for male enhancement pills.
What is male enhancement?
I don't know. I'm not a male, but I figured it was some kind of like a Viagra pill or something.
Oh, I wonder if it was blue.
I don't know, but the lady that I talked to said that Matt made an account with them, and they've been shipping those to him.
Well, they have.
Yes, and
on a monthly basis?
Yes. Oh. And she gave me the address where they were being sent to, and she told me what kind of pills. There were two type of pills that he was ordering. One was for performance, and I think the other one was for, what is that word for it? The erection part of it, I don't know. It was two types of pills it was.
Imagine that.
Well, yeah, and so I was like kind of shocked at what I was hearing from the lady that when I called that 800 number, and there was no way I could reconcile that at all. And then, of course, there was other charges.
I don't think I saw that in the tribal travel budget. Did you?
No.
Mary Helen, did you see it in the tribal budget, erection pills for the chairman?
I did not.
Oh.
So knowing that and some other things, you know, because I do travel also because I have to issue a travel authorization for anybody that goes on travel. And I have to put a number on there. And then I have to do the reconciliations on those, too. So when I look at his credit card, there was practically the whole thing was blank. I could not reconcile for charges made to hotels that there was no travel being performed that week or whatever, that month. And so I got that prepared, and then I turned that over to my supervisor.
Now, the normal process for travel is to submit those things, and then once they're approved, there's a voucher written, and then the funds are released.
Yes.
And so am I correct in suspecting that entire procedure was just bypassed?
Oh, yeah.
And the charges were just done on his tribal credit card with no oversight at all?
Right.
Okay. So besides the chairman's erection pills that he bought and his travel that he had on that card, what other kinds of charges did you see that were you didn't have backup paperwork for?
Well, I know he went on a conference in Albuquerque, New Mexico for an NCAI conference, and he funded his brother's whole vacation bill on travel funds because
that was sure nice of him.
Because I called the hotel to get their invoice to find out what that charge was, because I could not match that up with the travel authorization, and it came out to be his brother Philip's lodging bill for the week.
Philip, now isn't that address in Indiahoma?
Yes.
And isn't that the same address that his pills were being shipped to?
Yes. Well, actually, it was one number off, so I'm assuming it was had to been right next door or something.
The outhouse, maybe.
Something. It was one number off.
Okay. Well, so besides those things, what other type charges did you see on there?
Well, besides he had a bunch of hotel charges at Tulsa, other places that there was no conference, no meetings going on. It was
maybe
just
this is
charges.
Where he was using those pills at.
It's possible. I mean, I don't know. I just know there was, I couldn't reconcile it. You know, and so I had to turn that all over to my supervisor. Because that's what it says in the policy. That was my next.
So I've seen those, and you turned those over to the legislature. J.T. Goombay had them, and J.T. showed those to me.
I sent it to my supervisor, and then the supervisor turned them into the treasurer.
Uh-huh.
Treasurer's the one that said to send them to the legislator.
All right. So then I believe I saw charges for Netflix on
there. Oh, yeah.
And let's go into some more personal charges that the chairman felt that he needed to make on his Kiowa tribal card.
Like
Netflix, what else?
Oh, yeah, he had the Netflix was being paid out every month. So was the Google Music was being paid out every month. And, of course, all the lodgings in between.
How much would you estimate all that was in a given month?
Oh, geez.
Just take a guess.
Was
it in excess of $2,000?
Well, total on his pills were, getting close to that.
Oh, wow.
And I did tell him he needed to cut up his card or whatever, cancel it, but he didn't.
You know, if you're going to spend your money like that, shouldn't you be doing it on your private bank account instead of the Kiowa credit card that the whole public can see, like we're seeing right now? He had it on his personal account.
Well, he said Frida Sapatow is the one that emailed me wanting to know the cost of all his charges for the Google, the Netflix, the mail enhancement pills, and I did a spreadsheet because she said that Matt was going to pay those back.
Oh, well, that's nice of him.
But that never happened.
Oh, he never paid it back.
No.
Oh.
In fact, the charges when I left, they were still being charged to the tribal account.
So, let's go on to some other things. So, Mary Helen's got a question.
Besides his brother on the travel, were there other people that were paid for on the card?
There was another charge that was on his card. There was a charge to Greyhound Lines. He paid for somebody's bus ticket that was over $700. And at the time, I was still trying to, I got hold of Greyhound, and they were researching it, but I'm gone now, so I don't know what they found out about where that charge was.
So in looking at those, at the bank records and so forth, we noticed that that there were some charges paid for people's utility bills and some workers there at the tribes, and it added up to about $17,000. Could you go more into that?
Well, I think they found more, and it was close to $20,000 that this person stole.
And was that done on an ACH debit basis?
What she did was she got the routing and check number from the indirect cost and was making all these charges.
I see. And so you did bring this up to the chairman, you guys, the finance department did.
Well, my boss at the time, she wanted to file charges because that was the only way the Kiowa tribe can recoup those funds because the bank wanted to file charges. And that was the only way we could get the money back, but that never happened.
And so you guys did turn that into the Bureau eventually, didn't you?
Yes.
And am I to understanding that the investigator over at the Bureau is one of Matt's relatives, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, that's what I heard.
And so nothing ever happened with that, and the Kiowa tribe never collected that money that was embezzled.
Right.
See.
In fact, that's the reason why my boss was fired, is because she did that.
Right.
But that was the only good banking sense, you know, being the acting finance director, is to press charges for stealing from the tribe. And I believe when they told Matt about those charges, he said, fire him. But then he goes, wait, who was it? And they said it was this person. He goes, wait, hold on, I'll call you back. So when he found out who that was, he decided not to do that to her. He was not going to fire her, but eventually he did fire her. But nothing was ever done about her paying for that money that was embezzled.
So this person wrote checks.
No, they didn't.
No, she didn't use checks. She just used the routing number and the bank account number. And whatever she purchased online, she used those two to buy her stuff or pay her bills or whatever. But it totaled up to almost $20,000. Originally, what we turned in, the boss turned in was $16,000. But then they found more charges, and it added up to $20,000.
Well, that's federal charges, aren't they?
You would think. Yes. I'm sure if anybody else would have did that, they'd be in prison right now.
So let's go on to some other things that you saw from the COVID center. I know that you received the vouchers and you guys had to do the payments. What irregularities did you see in that, given the fact that there was a law passed that each person was to get each Kiowa tribal member was to get $1,000? Can you tell us about what kind of vouchers you saw that were far in excess of $1,000 to his family and friends?
Yes, and those were paid out first before anybody else. It was to the family members that worked in the COVID center. And I believe Matt's daughter was one of them. Hers was up to like $5,000. And then the other ones were paying their families' bills, and meanwhile, you know, they were telling everybody, turn in your application with all your documentation, your bills. Well, none of those got paid. It was just those select few, that got their bills paid. And everybody else that turned in their, practically, you know, turn in your darn whole life, it just got thrown in the trash. So it wasn't fair how they were doing stuff, and plus that, they were totally unorganized. I mean, they did everything by hand when they bought computers, but they were still doing everything by pen and paper, you know. And then those vouchers were coming up in duplicates, triplicates, you know, so they were kind of like messed up. And then when we thought it was going to be the end of it on December 31st, I just start telling the girls, just spit those checks out to these Kiowa members, because we're running out of time, and they're over there don't even know what they're doing. And of course Frida, she was totally mad at me after that, you know. And I'm like, it didn't benefit me, it just benefited all the Kiowa members that were waiting for that money. And of course Enoch brought that up in my appeal. That was another reason I was fired, but that was not the paper that I got. Their letter said I was fired because I forged a signature. So they were trying to pack on other stuff that had no bearing on my termination.
So if you were to estimate and just take a guess here, how many people got way in excess of $1,000? Just guess.
How many people in COVID center? 10.
And then his family and friends that didn't work there also got overpayments.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, all right.
It was
so
no fair.
There's some
fair
irregularities there. So, what else did you see that we haven't yet talked about?
Well, right now that, you know, they say you can test the fruits of a person's doings, you know, the fruits, you know, bear good stuff or bad stuff. Well, you're gonna have to look at that, people, because you don't look at how their appearance or what they claim to define their character. You base them on the fruits that they produce, and this is not fruits. All the stealing, the lying, I'm not the only Kiowa woman that got fired. There's like 8 of us. Other ones have not stepped up and said anything, but there was 8 of them. All of us grandmas, all of us got children to raise. And because we're not part of that clique with Matt, we were out the door. I mean, honestly, he expected us to, or expected me to just cover up what he was doing. And I'm trying to do my job and do it right because, hey, I work for the government. I know rules and regulations to follow, policy to follow, but there, you follow it sometimes and sometimes you don't. And I did the right thing. I turned it into my boss. That was the right thing to do. It wasn't right. And that's the kind of fruit that he's producing. So people out there, I would just, that meeting they had for that budget meeting, then he's only gonna tell you guys what you wanna hear, and that's it.
Are you talking about this morning's budget meeting?
Yes.
Yeah, I watched that too. And yeah. It was just the beginning. I could only watch about 15 minutes of it because I got nauseated.
Yeah, I just turned it off because it's the same old BS that I hear when I was working there. Nothing's changed. Matt, he worked in the government. He worked for Riverside School. He had to follow rules and regulations. So why can't he do that now? So he can't say he don't know. He's worked in that environment before. Credit card. Back then, they gave you travel credit cards. So he knows all that. So
this is probably one of the reasons why we don't have a tribal court, is we don't have any place to air our grievances. And here we are going on over 4 years without a court. And I know that we just uncovered a letter last week that showed that the federal government approved $271,000 to help us get our court going, and it's still not going. And whatever happened to that money? And so, you know, there's all this, this just raises more questions and more questions.
Well, which brings up that you said travel. I mean, the court administrator was claiming false overtime using COVID money. And, you know, that was turned in. My boss didn't want to pay him, but Matt said pay him. So, and that's documented also, that he didn't even work it. He claimed only about 2 hours, but he claimed about 80, 70 something hours.
Of overtime?
Yeah.
Doing what?
Supposedly talking to COVID, using COVID phone to answer tribal member calls. But when the phone, I also did the Verizon phone bill, so I could see all the calls they made or who called in. And didn't jive with his stuff that he turned in.
I'm just speechless at the brazen.
And it's going to continue. It's going to continue. It's going to continue until it's stopped. And it hasn't changed from years ago. Same old BS.
All right, Rose. At this time, let's go ahead and see if to bring in. Let's bring in Anita. Are you on the phone? Anita or Richard?
Yes, I am on the phone.
Richard, do you have any questions for Rose? Anita, go ahead. Do you have any questions for Rose?
Really, not really. I don't have any questions, but just listening and just not really shocked because I know that the character and the you know, the type of people that work there and where their loyalties lie and the integrity that they lack and where their heart is. And so I do know that when they see things going wrong, rather than blow the whistle, they just turn their eyes the other way and accept it. And I commend Rose and others like her that it just can see no other avenue but to go ahead and say something, you know, that about it, because it is abuse of the people. And so I commend you, Rose, for speaking up, because it is a kind of hard to do, you know, when you see wrongdoing. But if you don't speak up, then you become a part of it. And we always have to keep in focus, you know, what we're doing. We're providing a service for our tribal people, and there's just a few that work there, and they're providing a service for thousands. And so it's not just it's just not the home front people. It's a lot of people that you're serving. So I'm sure that they're all saying, when they hear this, they're going to say thank you for talking up.
So, Rose, do you have anything else you want to say before we close out your part?
No, just that people out there, you'll know a person by the fruit they bear. So remember that when you need to sign a petition.
Yeah, and speaking of petitions, if I'm not mistaken, Mary Helen, wasn't there a recall petition filed against the chairman on Thursday?
Yes, there was. And the volunteers have been signing up to get this petition. We need 1,800 to 2,000 signatures, and because we have a lot of registered voters, so requests are coming in.
So, Mary Helen, who should they contact if they're interested in signing the petition?
We will put out a list of the volunteers in the different areas. We have people in Dallas, North Texas, Tulsa, Wichita. We really need somebody in Albuquerque and perhaps Denver.
I thought we had Lee Montana and Steve Quitone out there.
Oh, yes. Okay, I need to write them down.
I have all that out.
Okay. And anybody else, because District 7 is the largest group of voters. And so we really need District 7 to step up and help us get these signatures for this District 7.
Okay. Next, Anita, let's go ahead and do your legislative update on what you got. I know that you just had your little procedure this morning, and I'm glad to hear that everything turned out okay with that. So it's your time now, Anita. Go ahead.
Okay. Unfortunately, I didn't get to attend the budget meeting, but I did hear that I had someone listening in on the Zoom, and I heard that there was really not any kind of solid information that transpired there. It was just a lot of talk about budget, indirect costs, information that was gone over by Mr. Donnie Topai and explanation on indirect costs. And so, I mean, we've already gone over that a couple of times, and that wasn't anything new to the legislature. And other than we have already discovered that it wasn't included in the revenue, and I think he was trying to explain that it isn't revenue, and I don't know how it couldn't be considered revenue, because revenue is money, and that's exactly what indirect cost is money. And so, anyway, that was my comment back to the person that was informing me but they just got tired of listening to the same old, and they just hung up, got off this call. But it wasn't anything, no information, no new information, no plan, no kind of, this is our request, this is our, this is how we desire to have some part in the budget. And when y'all do the budget, would you please put thus and so, because this is a need that we have, those kinds of. That's what I was hoping that we would hear as a legislature, that these are the items that we really need to focus on as a tribe because of what, you know. And we have a plan of action for the COVID, the Affordable Care Act, and these are the kinds of things we want to focus on, but nothing. So when the Affordable Care Act money comes in, and which we'll wait to see what it's going to be and include that in on the budget, because we can't, Kiowa's cannot spend that money. Executive branch cannot spend that money until it is in an approved budget. So we're waiting to hear what the plan of action is, what we hope to see in a plan, so that we can pass it on to the Kiowas in a budget and say, this is where the Kiowa tribe wants to put the money. We want to build a Taj Mahal, or, you know, we want to build a hospital, or we want to build a bunch of cars so that we can take everybody wherever they want to go, or, you know, what's our plan? We don't know. We have heard nothing on a plan. And so that's what I'm waiting to hear. How can we afford this plan? And I haven't heard any. Of course, today was the first meeting, and hopefully we'll have another meeting. The only other thing that I foresee in the next week, in this week, hopefully, is that we have a resume. We have a nomination for the executive director, for the executive branch, who is Don Topai. We have a nomination of Don Topai coming before the legislature, and I'm hoping it's this week that Ms. Bread will clear a way for us to have that meeting, and where we interview Mr. Topai, either by Zoom or in person. I'm not sure which we'll do. I'm sure it's going to be by Zoom. But where we can interview him and address anything that each legislature wants to address in the question. Normally we ask 3 questions apiece of the candidate, and then at some point in time we excuse them, and then we take a vote, and then we send our vote either confirm or not confirm to the chairman. And we only have 30 days to make that decision. And his letter of nomination came to us on May 14th. And so we have 30 days from that day to give the chairman an answer. And so that's the second part of news that I have. Let's see, we received a shocking letter this past week on a court funding that came to us via the chairman from the agency, from Ms. Tingle, who is not just here locally, but she's in Washington, on funding for the Kiowa court last January. And the last day to use that money was this January 2021. And it was a significant amount of money. I don't have the amount right in front of me right now.
It was $271,000.
Exactly what that is. Anyway, that amount had to be spent on specific things that was budgeted out for specific things. And I believe Mr. Asatami has been asked about that. And he answered with a positive answer, saying all that money had been spent as per the specifications in the allocation. And if that's true, then why is not our court open today? That's my question to Mr. Asatami. You know, why are we sitting here without a court open if they give us enough money to open that court? And plus, where's the money that the Kiowa tribe has approved a budget item on to fund the court? That's not including any COVID money, anything like that. It's the tribal money that went into the court over the past, 4 years we've put money into that court, and it still is not open. Then the agency goes ahead and kicks in much more money And, you know, we're almost to the top of $1 million, if not beyond $1 million, into the court. And we still do not open the doors yet. Something is wrong, very wrong, as you well know. I just keep repeating that. It's just, this is just wrong, so wrong. And I don't know what else to do. It just, but keep tooting the horn. It's wrong. And maybe someone will get it through their head pretty soon that this is wrong. And I understand that the CFR court is saying you have a backlog of 300 cases. Well, I don't care if we have a backlog of 300 cases. The judges should get those 300 cases and hold court every day until they get them all caught up.
Hey, Anita, you know, we're running out of time a little bit, so let's close up your comment, because we need to close out the show in a second.
Okay, Rob, go right ahead.
All righty. We have a couple of announcements. Anita, thank you for coming on the show, and I hope that hope you recover soon from your procedure today. A couple of announcements. Hane Gigama will be our Kiowa elder next week. 2, everyone please get vaccinated. Please contact your closest IHS clinic to find out how. Carnegie, you can call 580-654-2533. Lawton, you can call 580-354-5000. And Anadarko, you can call 405-247-7900. This weekend, the Unite the People Spring Powwow is today and tomorrow at Scissortail Park in Oklahoma City. The head staff, the MC, is R.G. Harris. Head singer is Perry Topa. Northern drum host is Thunderboy. And the arena director is Marshall Williamson. Also, the 49th annual Red Moon Powwow is today through Monday in Hammond, Oklahoma. The MCs are Wilbur Bullcoming and Burl Buffalo Meat. Head singer is Jason Goodblanket, and so on. And that is on Saturday through Monday. And Mary Helen, you got another one?
Yes, the Topa family is having a all-gourd dance today, the 29th, at the Esther Topa home place. It starts at 2 o'clock and will continue until dusk. Head singers, Charlie Horse. Head man, dancer, CJ Autone. MC, Cy Autone.
All right. We would like to thank Rose for coming into the studio. Rosie, thank you for coming in and sharing what you know with us. We really appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
And we'd like to thank all of our the Koigu people for tuning into our program on KACO New Country 98.5. Please pray for the Kiowa people, and as J.T. Goombay would say, Goombay for now.
The previous was a paid program, and the opinions expressed within it are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of KACO Radio or Mullman Media management and staff.
The thought of my sons growing up without me inspired me to quit smoking.
I talked to my doctors, and then I threw away all my cigarettes, ashtrays, and lighters.
I started exercising instead of smoking.
Getting support from friends online kept me on track.
Staying away from alcohol when I was first quitting was key.
Instead of smoking after I ate, I'd get up and take a walk.
I missed having a cigarette in my hand, so I'd hold a pen or a straw, anything.
Until I knew I wouldn't give in to temptation, I spent more time with my friends who didn't smoke.
I went to places that were smoke-free.
I didn't stay quit the very first time I tried.
I kept on trying, and I learned something each time.
Do whatever it takes.
No matter how many times it takes.
I quit.
I quit.
I quit.
We did it, so can you.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.
1 in 3 adults has prediabetes. 1 in 3. That means it could be you, your football buddy. Your football buddy. Or you, your best man. Your worst man. You, your dog walker. Your cat jogger. While 1 in 3 adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. That's doihaveprediabetes.org.
Wait, did they just say one in three adults has prediabetes? That's 33.33333% of adults. That means it could be me, my boss, or my boss's boss, or me, my favorite sister, or my other sister. That's seven members of my 21-person romantic book club. Wait, the one in three could be me, my karaoke partner Carol, or my karaoke enemy Jeff. I'm going to take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.